Welcome to a Prevent Connect podcast, where we explore the prevention of violence against women. This is a project of the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault.
So I'm curious then, you know, as you're working to really improve the partnership, you know, work with it as things change and keep it strong, you mentioned your healthy sexuality and healthy relationships work, classes, curricula, training. I'm wondering about with that, how are you able to and how were you able to ensure that it was really right for the community?
This is Jackie. We're using the relationship skills curriculum that the Northwest Network put together, and they're an organization that LGBTQ survivor run and led. So that's the curriculum that we're using, and I would say that we've done a little bit of amending, for instance, when we did a class that was specifically geared towards LGBTQ older adults. Basically, we just like shifted a little bit of the language. A lot of the material in the curriculum is obviously as general as possible, so it translates pretty well, but that's one thing that we definitely changed a little bit of the language and just sort of like some of the examples we used in different scenarios when we did the class geared towards older adults. And I would say one of the things that we've changed most is the curriculum starts with a piece around anti-oppression, and I've done a lot of intentional building with communities of color. So frequently I am the white person presenting to a room full of people of color around oppression, and that just feels wrong. So we've shifted a lot of the way that curriculum facilitated that conversation. It was very much less of a dialogue than a lot of the other sessions are in that curriculum. So we've changed that a lot and completely gotten rid of the part where it's like, I am the teacher and I am here to tell you about anti-oppression stuff. And so I'd say that was the most major change that we've made towards the curriculum that we're using.
One of the other changes that you've talked about is depending on the setting or the type of audience and whether they're going to be able to come back again or not, you've created some one-time workshops, and sometimes you do it as a multi-session thing that happens over several weeks.
Yeah. Some organizations just don't have time to have me there for 2 hours for 6 weeks. So there definitely have been times where I've cut it down to 3 weeks, which is very challenging, but I've done it.
This is Stacey. So the healthy relationship work that we did that was youth specific with RoseMe, that curriculum was really driven by the community that it was created for.
And that's really the essentials when we're talking about doing, you know, any prevention work, any work with any community, right? It's about really being defined and driven by the community. What's it like for you as a trans health services manager, Afton, to be doing things like talking about healthy sexuality and healthy relationships that haven't always included trans identities?
Yeah, definitely. One of the beneficial things as well with FansFree is our transgender health clinic has been in existence for 10 years now. And in addition to that, we also are one of the primary HIV prevention and outreach organizations in the Richmond area. We've had a lot of discussions around sexual health and prevention, and we've made steps with those dialogues to make those more trans-friendly and the language more relatable to the community. And so one of the greater challenges that we've had was figuring out how to move from just talking about HIV and sexual health into more of every part of a person's identity in terms of relationships and not just the sex and prevention aspect. And one of the greater benefits we have is that we do have this trans advisory board, which half of the members of the trans advisory board are members of the trans community. And that really helps open up a dialogue. And as part of my role, I opened up a couple of discussion groups for our clients to come to and really talk to them about what we had done in the past in terms of HIV prevention and sexual health work, and to ask them what worked, what didn't, and what other pieces of relationships and sexual health did they want to talk about. The feedback that they gave was probably the best responses we could have got. And we had an overwhelming amount of participation. And since I am the intake counselor for all of our new trans patients, I always make sure to do a piece of ground relationships and checking in and kind of let them know what exists. And typically just that one-on-one and me just kind of being really open and creating that open dialogue, it's remarkable how much people will share. And I think myself being trans definitely helps a lot in terms of kind of already building that trust, but if you leave the questions open enough, you know, your clients kind of fill in the work and they kind of steer where we need it to go.
Mm-hmm. And that's so great to hear. So often we talk about, you know, we need to do assessments. We need to do some work before we just get out there and say, hey, we're going to tell you about this. And it sounds like that's exactly what you did. So it's always something we really like to encourage, and it's great to see it being done. One of the things you all talked to me about briefly was hate-motivated violence. And I just wanted to touch on that and see what you all had to say about that, and including that, you know, when we do this work trying to prevent sexual, domestic, dating violence and stalking, right, we don't hear that term, hate-motivated violence. But it really is something that's very, very important to talk about when you're doing work in the LGBTQ communities.
Yeah, this is Ted. Virginia Anti-Violence Project pretty much got started because a number of people who were already sort of interested and involved in sexual and domestic violence issues for LGBTQ people, we wanted to be able to meet the needs of the communities that we're trying to work with. And you know, we saw the gaps that were existing in the services that are provided by mainstream sexual and domestic violence organizations. And you know, a big part of that gap is the fact that people exist in a context of society that has a huge amount of stigma around sexual identity and gender identity. And in order to really address the needs of people, you need to acknowledge that stigma and also acknowledge the violence that people experience in their everyday lives just because of their identity. Without addressing hate-motivated violence and institutional violence, then we couldn't really meet the needs of survivors who are experiencing other types of violence, like dating violence or sexual violence.
Right, and we really have to change the environment. You said it's, you know, societal, so we have to change the environment in which this violence is happening, and to if we're looking at preventing, you know, sexual and domestic violence, as many of our audience is looking at, then we have to think, well, what's the larger context? What's allowing this to happen? And that's where you're looking at and you're talking about, well, let's look at hate-motivated violence.
Right, and then even beyond that, we really want to focus on other types of violence because, you know, the intersectional mm-hmm. violence of that people experience if they're dealing with being from a different racial background or being an immigrant or something like that, all those different things all come into play. And so if you don't look at the whole person and all of the struggles that they're experiencing, you can't really be there for them when they're in a situation where they're experiencing sexual domestic violence.
Mm-hmm. And this is Quillen. I think often we think that people don't get that, like that practitioners have all the answers. Jackie and I were doing this workshop at a recent HIV conference, and we were displaying the power and control wheel and just talking to folks about how violence shows up in the lives of LGBTQ people. And one of the participants, we showed the big wheel with the culture wheel on the outside, and they just said, how are we going to stop the violence without working about all that other stuff at the same time? And we were like, that's it. That's the million-dollar thing. Like, we can't, mm-hmm. it's both and. And I think people get that. And getting folks invested in that bigger circle of stuff would probably be easier than we think it is. Because so many folks do want to funnel to the individual. I want to help somebody that needs something tonight and is in crisis. But I think particularly in our community, folks are invested in looking at that bigger picture and figuring out how LGBTQ folks can come together to change the landscape.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so great to see it happening. It's so great to see the work that you all are doing. What would you have to say if our audience members are wondering, wow, how might I be able to do something like this? Do you have any lessons learned or any tips you'd like to share?
So this is Stacey. I think about that the shifts that we're seeing nationally, and I think about the group of folks that have been doing this work for decades, but specifically with this group, it has roots and it has history going back, as Ted said, about 10 years now. And even in 10 years, seeing how things have shifted, the pace of things and how things are, in some ways, the rapidness of some of the change that we're feeling is the visible tipping point. I think this group has really struggled with the tension of what work do we have to do in mainstream anti-violence world, because there is work to do, and how do we spend even more resources and energy building relationships, like Quillen said, and taking the time to connect with the very real diverse voices of the LGBTQ community in Virginia, whether it's a card or a workbook or a training or a hotline call, that those things are all centered and rooted in the LGBTQ community, not in the mainstream anti-violence community. And so I think sometimes that's, at least from a mainstream perspective, like showing up and then shutting up. And listening, because it's not about us. It's about the community. And it's not easy to do.
And I really appreciate how honest and authentic that you all have been, not only on this call, but it sounds like through your partnership as well. And I think that's what we need is folks who are willing to do it. And so I thank you all for being willing to be here on this podcast with me today. So I've been talking to Ted Heck, Afton Bradley, Stacey Vachetti, Jackie Small, and Quillen Drew Musgrave. So thank you so much. They are all from the Richmond Area Partnership. I want to thank you for joining us, and I really look forward to seeing where this work goes in the future.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this Prevent Connect podcast. Prevent Connect is a project of the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault, with funding from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The views presented on Prevent Connect are not necessarily the views of the United States government, the CDC, or CalCASA. To learn more about Prevent Connect, visit www.preventconnect.org. For more information about CalCASA's mission or to show your support, visit calcasa.org. That's CalCASA.org.